you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am.
This meeting is being recorded.
I believe every lie that I ever told. Paid for every heart that I ever stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold. Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed. Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are listening to this show, live or on podcast. Thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. We are here for all of your mental health, love, relationship, attachment, and community needs. For those that would like to participate in the show, you can contact us at b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's B, the number 2, B, P-S-Y-C-H. b2bpsych@gmail.com. As we always like to say, we like to thank Marshall University as well as WMUL for providing us this platform to talk about mental health issues in our communities. But as we always say, any of the questions, comments, suggestions, perspectives, or ideas that you hear on this show are not supported by Marshall University or WMUL, are not supported by any of their sponsors or affiliates or supporters. But these are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, as well as Dr. Nate Chapman. So as we always say, and I know this sounds bad, this is such a poor way to start any show out. But as we always say, take this advice at your own risk. So Dr. Chapman, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Living the dream.
As we always say, we like to remind people that we are big time now. This show is coast to coast. So from West Virginia to California to sunny, sunny Southern California and everywhere in between, we are being heard. So how is sunny California treating you, sir?
Treating me good. I also wanted to, I'm not sure if this disclaimer was put out there, remind you lovely folks that this is not therapy. And so don't come at us with that. You know, we do hope that it's therapeutic and that you find your way to a therapist should you need to do that. But this is just talk radio, folks. That's all it is.
Yes, yes. Again, that is probably the most important disclaimer that I forgot to give. That, again, while we're trying to help and we hope you receive inspiration of some sort, this absolutely, positively is not therapy. So, again, as we always say, we thank those who continue to support the show, who continue to send questions, comments, and suggestions. If you have suggestions for ideas or for guests or for books for us to review, whatever the case may be, again, b2bpsych@gmail.com, b2bpsych@gmail.com. So let's jump right into it. Again, I've posted on my Facebook account as well as I've attached Dr. Chapman. Today we'll talk about the main piece. We will talk about today is now what?
I know. There was one thing I wanted to forgot about. I wanted to get your thoughts on.
Okay, well.
I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, it's the NBA playoffs. I'm not sure if you're following the playoffs or not, or I don't even know who your team is. You know, I'm moving to Brooklyn. But I was wondering if you had any thoughts of what's going on with the fans out there. Fans seem to be well, not all of them, but, you know, a small number seem to be wilding out a little bit. I mean, and the Wizards game, you had the fan that tried to, I don't know what he was doing, tried to run on the court. They got him. You had the individual that threw popcorn at Russell Westbrook. You had the person that spit at Trey Young or Trey Young's family. You had the water bottle being thrown at Kyrie. That seems, it just seems like a lot of incidents within the last, I don't know, a couple weeks. I wonder what your thoughts were on that.
Where do we start? Emotionally, I think a larger part of it is, when I think about it, I know this may seem disjointed, but it's not. It also makes me wonder, it makes me think about, why do people treat their servers poorly when they go out to eat? Now, I know you may be thinking, what does that have to do with anything? But there are people who, when they go out to eat, they treat their servers poorly. And the reason for that is, I've taken someone's mess and someone's insults and someone's crap all week long. Now it's time for me to displace that energy and for somebody to take my crap. And I wonder if, so I think that that is, at least for me, that is why the ice is, that's why their food is never hot enough. It never tastes good enough. The ice is never cold enough. All week long, I've taken someone's crap, and now it's time for someone to take mine. And I wonder if, in instances, back to your example, if some of it is a little bit of that. I'm not saying that's the sole driving force, but some of it is just a little bit of that. I've taken crap. I paid my tickets, and because I've paid my tickets and you're an entertainer, entertain me. And because I have paid for you to entertain me, there's certain rights that come along with that. I paid for this ticket. You know, I told you I used to referee, and I had a couple that tried to assault me or fight me after a game. And it wasn't even for something that I did. Like, it was something that the guy that my partner called a call that they thought was a bad call, and it actually was a good call. But most people don't know sports. That's another conversation. But the wife said to me, "You get paid to take our." She said, "You get paid to take our stuff." She used colorful language, but she said, she is her exact words were, "You get paid to take our stuff." So people actually believe, because they pay tickets, that they have that you are an object. You're not a person. You're an object out there. This is entertainment. And this is what you get paid for. This is all a part of the game. And I have the right, because I've taken somebody, you know, everybody takes somebody's crap. I took somebody's insults and somebody's crap and somebody's heat all week long. And now it's your turn. And I have to displace my energy somewhere. And you get paid millions of dollars. This is nothing. You knew that this came along with the job description. So those are that's where I think that's a part of where I think it comes from. If we get into the other parts and pieces, we won't have a show, because I could talk about this all day, because I believe there's a racial component to it as well.
Interesting. I think some of the things you said made me think. Like when you said displacement, I don't know if our listeners are familiar with like what displacement is in terms of psychological terms. So that would be considered in like Anna Freud, Sigmund Freud terms as a defense mechanism. So you displace something that you feel that you would want to, some type of emotion that it doesn't feel safe to put on someone else, like a boss figure, authority figure, somebody else, for whatever reason. You could be consciously or unconsciously aware of it. You hold on to that energy, that anger, and then as soon as you get, like as you said, with the server, you let it out there. Or in these cases, maybe you let it out with sports. I think that's an interesting kind of concept, because it might not just be about, if we think about it in that way, it might not just be about what's happening in the workplace, but it could just be displacement of frustration about where you really are and how you like to project those things onto the game, because games become small victories for you, and you messing up my victory when you are Kyrie and you are beating my team, beating the brakes off my team. that was supposed to be my victory for the day. I already got a bad job or situation. Now, again, I'm not saying this is all situations with fans, but you get into it because it symbolizes. It becomes bigger than you. It symbolizes something. It's like a victory. Even when my team wins, I feel like it's like I won. Like I was out there. Like I was like on the court doing something, you know? So I think there's something to be thought about from that whole displacement piece you mentioned.
I like that. You know, and that's something that I didn't think about it. I didn't go there with it. That's an interesting door you open, this notion or idea of how people truly are invested in their teams as if they are a part of the team. You buy their apparel. You wear their hats. You defend your team at the water cooler. Don't these people know? You know, don't the New York Jets know as people let people dog them, but I defend them at the water cooler? Like, I am loyal, no matter how we're... And then all of a sudden, someone comes along and you abuse my team. To some degree, I take it personally. That's interesting. I didn't think of it that way. Like I said, I think there are a lot of different avenues to be explored. This is a good topic. So I was like, man, if we start to talk about this, we could talk about this for a minute.
Well, maybe we'll come back to it. But the reason I was thinking about it in the first place is I was... During this time of the year, I'd be watching all the sports pundits and, like, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's pretty much how I catch up on sports because I don't have cable at the house. Unless I go out and watch the game, I got to get the highlights from everywhere else. But there was I can't remember this particular pundit's name, but he was talking about the fans. And he said, like, because Kevin Durant had made a comment, and basically the comment was that people need to grow up and recognize that this is sports, that there's humans out there that he knew and understand that we're going through a pandemic and that might cause a little bit more anxiety, worry, whatever. And so this pundit highlighted that part and said, like, I really think there's a mental health piece to this. And so as a mental health professional, I always perk up when I hear those things because I'm wondering, is it appropriate for this particular type of thing that's happening with fans to label it as that? That doesn't mean that there can't be some of that going on. I don't know. But I think sometimes that's one of the reasons and one thing that contributes to mental health being misunderstood is that the label is being thrown out there. Like, it just, like, I don't know if it fits in this fan situation. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but that's what made me wonder, like, what your thoughts were on it.
That's a good point, how we mislabel everything. Maybe people just acting ridiculous. There's a difference between someone having serious mental health issues and you just outside of yourself and you acting ridiculous right now. You need to sit down.
Yeah.
Or is it all mental health to some degree? You know, like, but right. it again, I think you make a good point. It plays an important part how we mislabel stuff.
Yeah, because I think it doesn't really hit the spectrum, because maybe what he meant to say was, you know, people have been struggling because of the pandemic and, like, they don't know what to do now that they're out in their game again. It's like a kid who doesn't know how to act. Now they're in the middle of the store, like, oh, just go crazy because there's everything I can do. Like, okay, so maybe you're saying it has something to do with this person's situation where they used to be in one situation because of the pandemic and now they're in this other situation. But does that mean mental health? I don't know. Mental wellness, maybe. But it just something to think about.
I agree. I don't agree with it because this was happening before. This was happening before the pandemic. People was cursing out players and talking about their moms and their girlfriends and their dog. They would find out your dog's name and talk about your dog. Like, people have been acting ridiculous at these games forever. And I think that's probably something interesting to discuss a little bit later. This idea of the fan or the fanatic.
Yeah, man. It's reminding me of that movie with Robert De Niro, The Fan.
Yeah.
But, like, when you said they talking about people's dogs, just imagine that, right? In our profession, professors, like, I mean, we do have haters out there. But to the extent that they would be like, if they found out about my dog, and his name is Raza, like, oh, Raza, you're trash. Raza, like, just harassing my dog over how he feel about me, I can't even imagine it.
Dog shaming. But again, I have the right because I bought a ticket, and because I bought a ticket, I have the right to say these things. And that's funny. That's one of the first things that they taught us as referees, is just because somebody bought a ticket, still sitting at the game is a privilege. people, it's almost like people think that just because they have the driver's license, they have a right to drive. No, driving is a privilege. It doesn't matter that you pay for a driver's license. Driving is a privilege. Going to a game to buy a ticket and sit at a game is a privilege. You don't have to be there. You don't have the right to be there. And I don't think that fans understand that. And there truly no, what are the real repercussions from cursing out the players or spitting on them or throwing something? They're going to put you out of the game. Like, until there's serious repercussions. I think in Philadelphia, they had a jail in there. Like, shout out Philly. Like, they had a jail in their football stadium. Somebody correct me. And had a judge there to adjudicate you. Like, Philly, you know, because those Philly fans, can they die hard. They don't mess around, you know. But I want to say they had, like, a small holding room or small holding cell or something. Like, when you have to do stuff like that, you know you're doing something wrong. Like, yeah. Like something is going on, but it's always been like that. But spitting on players and people truly feel like, I don't think that they feel like, it's again, we have to revisit this because where do people lose sight of the fact that these are people out there? Like, people actually feel like it's okay to beat up referees. Like, they have to, like, states are creating laws now, making it high misdemeanors and felonies to attack referees because people feel like refs aren't real people. So it's just, it's cool that something is being done, but until the people see real repercussions, you know what I'm saying? I don't know, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, man, you know, I forget that you refereed. So seeing as NBA season, it would have been cool to have like a little segment where you like look over a call and say if you agree with it or not.
Look, I didn't say I was a good referee. Now, I said I refereed. I didn't say I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
I said I ran up and down the court and I blew my whistle. That was the extent of what I did, you know. And I may get back into it this fall, so you know what I mean. Send positive energy my way, but it's interesting how I could speak with someone before a game. We could laugh and joke. I could go in the back and put those stripes on, and they would get mad. They would literally frown at me, and I'm like, "You was just." I'm talking to this lady, she's this elderly lady, she's like 65 years old. We're having a great conversation, and all of a sudden I come back out, and she huffs at me. And we just spoke, like something changes. It's almost like they forget that you're a person when you put on that, you're the other team once you put that uniform on.
Yeah.
This is going too far, Gally, but I want to say this. It makes me think about war. And it makes me think about hearing soldiers say, this guy could be a friend or a brother or somebody I played golf with, but he just so happened to be born at another in another country. But now he is, quote unquote, he or she is the enemy. They're insurgents. It's guerrilla warfare. You know what I'm saying? And once they put on a different uniform, and they stand on another side, all of a sudden, I don't see you as a brother or an uncle or someone who could possibly be my friend. Now you're the enemy. And I wonder if that's what happens in sports, that type of idea. You know what I'm saying? So it's something dope to think about for us to tease apart a little bit later. We should put a pin in that and come back to it. I think that will be a really good idea. Maybe have some players and some coaches come on. You know what I mean? Talk about their experiences as well. That would be dope. All right. Again, station identification. This is WMUL 88.1 FM on your dial. This is Dr. Nate Chapman, Dr. Keelan Hinton with Brother to Brother. And today we started out talking a little bit about all the emotions and aggression that's happening in the NBA now, you know, with spitting at players and, you know, what is it that motivates and give fans makes them feel like they have the right to treat the players and the referees that way. Now we're moving on and moving forward to build on our conversation last week. Last week we talked about, we gave advice to our graduates. And now we're moving into the second phase of the conversation and we're asking, now we want to shift from the kids to the parents. And we want to ask all the parents out there, now what? Now that your son or your daughter has graduated, or maybe your kids haven't graduated. Maybe your kids are getting ready to move out of the house. they're transitioning into another phase in their life, and they're moving out of your house to gain a little bit more independence. And now it's just you and your spouse. And the question now is, now what? Because for the last 18, 19, 20, some folks 25, some folks 30, you know. Yeah, you know, little Jimmy or little Sarah, whoever. And those are just made up names. So if anybody has a Jimmy or Sarah in the basement, that was inadvertent, I promise. You have your kids who've been living in your basement for the last 20, 30, or 40 years, and now they're moving. And now it's just you and your spouse at home. The question is now what? You've put all of your effort and energy, and Dr. Chapman is our relationship expert. He does a lot of really, really good stuff. He works with couples. He's very efficient and very good at working with couples, as well as he is a Gottman protege / disciple. So he, to say that he knows his stuff. He's not just a fly-by-night. He really knows his stuff. We wanted to speak a little bit to the parents. And maybe what are some of the things that parents are going to start to go through now that their kids are gone, trying to find an identity, their individual identities, as well as this idea of, wait, we've put all of our energy into our kids up until this point. Now it's just me and you. And do I even know who you are? Are you the same person? Have we neglected each other for so much and for so long? I don't even know if I like you now. So how, you know, giving a little bit of advice to parents as to maybe where to even start to get to know each other all over again. But my first question, Dr. Chapman, is this separation anxiety that some parents are going to go through? Who's more likely to go through identity issues, mom or dad, or maybe both? Do you think that mom is more likely to have some issues with sort of readjusting more so than dad? Or do you just think that both of them are just going to have to redefine themselves all over again?
Interesting question. Well, I guess I would start out with saying the worry or concern that will come with kind of reshaping your life. I won't use the word separation anxiety because I just think of a specific disorder. But I think I haven't seen any stats that would tell me which caregiver it would be. I think if you're in more traditional gender roles, it would be more likely probably to be the mom if she's in that kind of caregiver role. But obviously it will depend. I think that it's going to come down to how the parents have shaped their life. You know, sometimes couples have like a child-centered relationship. Means, and depending on who you talk to, people might think that is the way that it's supposed to be. Like, who comes first in the relationship? And basically it's going to be, from the standpoint of this couple, the child comes first. And there are different points and different thoughts on that. I will tell you that there is something to be thought about for the child not coming first. That, I mean, it doesn't mean neglect the child, but once the child becomes the first in the relationship, then your partner becomes second, and it creates the type of dynamics for problems when you have to separate, or problems, I mean, when your kid goes off to college or wherever else they go, they get their own place, or it creates these transition problems. And
what do you say to couples that say the kids should come first? True or false?
Look, couples, you live your life the way you want to live your life. I'm not here trying to tell you what you should do, but I will tell you, you should, I would advise you to be cautious if that's your decision. If you're going to say kid comes first, then you have to ask yourself, how does it affect the dynamic of your relationship with your partner? If you can work it out so that it doesn't create any extra friction, and you might not always see that friction or that disconnection that it's creating over time, then carry on. But if you see that it is creating disconnection, then you might want to reevaluate where you're at. And when I say, you know, not having a child focused, that doesn't mean that you're not taking care of all your child's needs. That's just saying that you put the husband, wife, partner dynamic first, then the child dynamic.
That's interesting because how strong can the family unit be if the main two pillars that hold the building up are weak? So I like that idea. I like that notion of idea that you're talking about, that kids should be a priority. You know, maybe there shouldn't be a hierarchy. Maybe there shouldn't be a first, second, last. Maybe that there are multiple priorities that have needs that we need to make sure we balance and make sure that all of those needs are met. But it's interesting. It's like, if mom and dad aren't happy, then, and mom and dad take care of everybody else, then what happens to the state and foundation of that family?
Yeah, and that's it. It sounds hierarchical, and I guess it depending on, you know, what kind of systems therapy you would be applying, it might actually be hierarchical. But that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, in terms of the amount of attention you give and the focus. So not about rank, but my child is always going to come first will generally translate into everything else comes last, including my partner. And this might start early on in life. There might be times you have to shift. It's like, obviously, if you're the typical standard, the gender role where you're the mother taking care of the child, maybe you're breastfeeding and so on and so forth, there's going to be a period during that time where there's a disconnect naturally happening between a father and mother, because the mother has to spend so much time with the baby. And obviously the baby can spend more time with dad, but all of those other things are happening mainly with mom. And this is not something that dad can take part on. And these things sometimes can just continue over the course of years.
Yeah.
Disconnect starts early and then it just continues on. So not about hierarchy, but if you're not really making time for that relationship, you can't expect, just because you'll get lost in the kid. You're going to do whatever you can to keep the kid going. And when that kid leaves, you're going to recognize it then. And this is where you have those long-term separations or divorces happening after many years together.
Is that why date nights and sharing a bowl of cereal anymore, is that why those moments are so important? To stop. Like, just your opinion. Is that why those things are so important?
Yeah, everybody who's a parent knows, you don't even have to be a parent to know this, that parenting is not easy work. You got the task of being a parent, the task of having a job, if you both have jobs, even more of a task and struggle, and finding time to, these are all the elements of time you have to find. Family time, couple time, and if you're lucky, self time. All three of those actually are important though. And for a family that is child dedicated, child time is all that's happening. Child time, sleep, get up, go to work. That's it.
Yeah. I wonder, can that, and again, maybe this is another conversation for another day, but I wonder, can that lead to parents low key being jealous of their kids?
Hmm.
Especially if they feel like he's giving more attention to the kids and I'm not getting any attention, or she's getting more attention to the kid, giving more attention to the kids, and daddy got needs over here too. And it's, and how is that? Is that exacerbated if it's a blended family and them ain't my kids?
Oh, man. For sure.
I wonder, is it more tolerable? That's interesting dynamic. Is it more is that not receiving attention more tolerable when they're your quote unquote your biological children? And if they're not your children and you taking care of somebody else's kid, quote unquote somebody else's kids, does that, you know, is it more bothersome? What do you think? Does that dynamic matter?
I mean,
well, we know it happens. We know it happens.
Right. Obviously, that all comes down to the individual person, you know, and kind of how they value those relationships and what matters, and then the temperament that's happening overall. I think what I would be mindful of in situations is more of how to prevent that from happening. And I think it wouldn't be unrealistic to think, whether it's your blood or not, that some form of jealousy could be created. Like, we've seen this, like in Gottman's research, there is some studies that suggest early on, when the mother is spending more time with the baby and getting all of that experience and exposure to the baby, and the dad feels isolated and like they're not really a part of it. Obviously, they can be a part of it in some respect, but if the mother is breastfeeding and doing these things that create a biological bond, the dad doesn't have that overall. That there is, now I won't say jealousy, but there's definitely this feeling of, and this baby is like getting this all this attention. On an unconscious level, probably, when this baby getting all this attention, I'm getting nothing. Because at the end of the day, even when it comes down to things like sex, you know, the mother probably feels like, I would imagine, hey, look, you know, I got the baby, I'm feeding the baby, I don't need you hanging all over me too. Like, I'm going to save this for the baby. Like, you know, like, and I mean, attention and all of that. Like,
yeah,
it creates that dynamic, whether it tends to or not.
I wonder if the issue is where the frustration start. I wonder if the frustration comes from, it's not so much that you're giving the baby attention, but it's like, you ain't got no energy for me. You got energy for the kids. You got energy for your friends. I mean, that, I think that's kids excluded. I think that's some people's issues with their partners, just relationship dynamics in general. Like, you got all this energy for working for your homegirls and for your homeboys or whatever, but now I feel like I get nothing. You know, I've heard the wives of athletes talk about that dynamic. It's like, he's a professional athlete and I understand, but you got all this energy for everybody else, and it's like, you come home and I get nothing, and that's a lonely life. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much that you do what you do, but it's the fact that when I get you, I just get what's left.
Right. And that's like one of the problems of this whole empty nest syndrome. Rather, it's more going to affect the father or the mother. When the kid goes off, that's the life you created, you know what I'm saying, where dad goes off, works, mom goes off and work, and then when they get home, really it's about, early on, it's about the baby being a baby. As the baby grows up, depending on resources they have, it might be about getting them to do this outside thing. And they're going to start soccer, or as they get older and they might get more competitive in other sports. They're doing football now, or they're doing, it's all about what the kids' schedules are. And that's, you have one kid. If you got a whole bunch of kids, then it's all of their schedules. Like, okay, we're doing, you know, do whatever we can. We got to get them to college. We got to, you know what I'm saying? If you got a female, you're like, oh, I want to make sure that she's not on the pole. Whatever we can to make sure that everything goes well, that's what you're doing. But while you're doing all that, you're not spending time with each other. Now, if you got just one, that one goes off. You did your job. It's like, it's kind of like a relief, but then after the relief is over, you're like, okay, we did it. And then, oh shoot, it's just me and you again. We don't have all these things that were filling our schedule, and we didn't really dedicate enough time. It's like, another analogy would be like, okay, sort of. I don't even know if it fits, but I'm thinking about it because of the NBA. You know, AD is injured, right?
Yeah.
There's a talk about, and I can't remember his name right now, the guy who was basically sixth man of the year on the team, and how they hadn't played him enough up to this point, and now they're going to try to, if they try to insert him in, it's not going to work out so well. Regardless if you follow the names or not, the point is the same. Like, you've spent so much time on this kid and getting them where they need to go, and you've neglected the relationship between you two. Now the kid is off, and it's just you two. And you really have no foundation, nothing to really settle on, and it's like a black hole that's going to hit you hard.
Yeah. I just had a friend contact me and was like, she's married, has kids, and was like, she just said, you're exactly right. Like, when you're going through that whole mothering stage, and you're trying to take care of kids, it's like you're putting so much effort and energy into the children that when it's time, you know, it's nothing that you purposefully do. It was like, she's like, I didn't want to be touched or looked at or nothing. Right. You're putting so much time, effort, and energy into the kids. So she's just saying that there is some truth into that, and that it's not something that you purposefully do. It's not something that purposefully happens. It's just, obviously, because the kids can't fend for themselves, and they're the most vulnerable. You're putting effort and energy into them, and it just sort of happens. And if couples don't consciously address those things and talk about those things and try to make a conscious effort to not make those things happen, it's very easy for that to happen to any couple.
Any couple. Super easy. We got life. We got a whole bunch of things going on. And that happens to a number of couples I work with. Basically, they have whatever age the kid is. They got into a routine of taking care of the kids, having to do all those things. They got work, and they just can't. It's like, we don't have time. Like, the most time, the time we spend together is when we come see you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. So now the question is, I guess the answer is, and I guess for a lot of parents, I mean, it's a little late. I know they're probably, I can hear somebody saying, y'all should have had this show 15 years ago. But the idea. But
okay. What I would say to that is, if you're, as a couple, you have assessed where you're at, even if you feel like you're looking at a black hole, and then you feel like there's good value in each other, then it's not too late. Actually, you could be excited about it. You might be able to say, like, okay, we built a life together, and now it's time to renovate, you know, or you can even consider moving into a new house, because now you got to relearn each other and stuff like that. And I don't know many people that don't get excited about a new house, and you get to build it up from scratch. Like, okay, so I'm going to get to know you, you're going to get to know me, but it's all going to have to be intentional.
Yeah. Should couples call each other to the carpet and figure out if they're still compatible after all this time? Or should they say, and maybe it's, again, situational, should couples, after so long of not giving each other any attention at all, should they say, hey, let's call each other to the carpet and figure out if we even still compatible? Or should they say, hell, we in this for the long run. We got way too much in common not to try to get to know each other all over again. We had kids. We raised them. We went on all these trips. We made all these memories. We spent all this money. We bought all this. Our lives are intertwined with each other. Is the best thing for them to say, we got way too much in common, and we've shared way too much to not try to continue to love each other and know each other?
Yeah, there's no one size that fits all. I guess what I would recommend is more, I do think it's good to have a come to the carpet conversation regardless of where you're at. Some couples have been able to keep that connection even before the kid moves out, and other couples maybe have had to change some things. But when you come together with that conversation, I don't think it's about are we compatible or are we not compatible. I think it's about where do we want to be in this relationship? You got together, you've been together for a while, so even if you've changed, clearly you have changed. Every minute you're together, you're changing and evolving. But there's a likelihood, depending on where you're at and your whole mindset, that you could make it work, even if you are not, you know, you don't agree on everything, you know, even if you like salt and pepper or something like that. But I think it's really about your intentions, your conversation about what you want together for your relationship. And if those things seem to be out of alignment, then maybe you seek some additional help to kind of figure that out and work through those things. Another thing I think might be useful through that process is going down memory lane, and sometimes that's not always good. Okay, so
why not?
I tell you, because it depends on the couple, right? Like, all right, I like to ask a question, and this question is usually, all right, telling to me. I guess you can borrow it. Y'all can borrow it if you want. But the question is basically, tell me some version of, tell me how you met. When I ask that question and I hear what someone's first impression of somebody was, how they first met, early courtship, a couple of things happen. Sometimes people's face light up. They tell me, oh, yeah, you know, from the beginning when I saw them, you know, they're the cutest thing I've ever seen. I really like their smile. They had, you know, they had the swag or whatever it is. Or sometimes it's like, well, they were annoying from the start. You know, like they were like trying to manipulate me. I mean, that usually doesn't bode well. But so it can be positive if you take yourself back to that time, remember those old times. The conversation about the past is really just is done to have you think thoughts of admiration and fondness And then you use that to have this whole conversation of rebuilding. Okay, that's how you started then. Look at how far you've come. What can you do now? Because nobody can live in the past, but it might spark some good memories.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what I really like that. That's what I mean by now we're here. And the fact of the matter is, it's hard to leave any situation that you've invested. I mean, and over every day, I believe that every day you're with someone, you're investing in them. If it's another day, if it's another day of your life, you're investing. You invest your time, you invest physically, mentally, emotionally. You're constantly investing. So I think, go ahead.
I guess I am 50% agreeance with that, because I think that is the thought is that when you spend time with someone, and this is particularly why it's hard and why people end up staying in relationships for longer periods of time, is because they feel like each moment is an investment, and like, you know,
I fully agree.
Time and all this other stuff.
That's why it's hard to leave bad relationships.
Right, but I don't necessarily think it follows that just because you're in a relationship, you're actually invested in that person, because there are plenty of relationships where people invest in themselves every day and are just in the relationship.
No, but I think that those two are two different things, though. I think...
Okay, but they could be. Like, they could be there every day. They could be, like, getting up with this person, watching the same kind of show, doing the task, and not actually investing in them.
You're still investing because you're losing something. If I am with someone and I don't like them, I am still losing time that I could be with somebody else.
But, okay, but if I lose money, does that mean I'm investing it?
It's still something that was yours that you could have invested in a different way, that you could have invested in a different way.
I spent it, but I didn't invest it. It's not going to grow.
Oh, no. Investment, when I say investment, I don't necessarily mean to give something that matures and grows.
Okay.
When I say investment in the context of a relationship, is you're constantly giving of yourself. You're giving of your time. It doesn't have to grow, but you're constantly spending and giving. To spend, and from the perspective of a relationship, to me, means you're giving. And the reason that people, there are people out there right now, some of y'all right now, I'm just going to be honest with you, you with somebody that you really don't love. You just think you love them because you've invested. When I say invested, I mean you've given. Every day you're with someone, you're constantly giving. You're giving your time. You've given money. You've given physically, mentally, emotionally. You done cried over this person. You're constantly spending parts and pieces of yourself so as to feel like, so you don't feel crazy. Why am I spending my time, effort, energy, emotions, spiritually, mentally, physically? Why am I doing this? It's cognitive dissonance. You tell yourself, obviously, I love this person. That's why I'm doing this. So you don't feel crazy about spending on someone.
Right. But I guess this is how I see that and why it's why I think it gets people down the just something that's not productive. I see it as going down a road that is going to take you to an end point you don't want to be at. And you keep walking down that road because you've already been on this road. I've been running on this road for so long. If I turn back now, I was lost. But at the end of the day, when you get to the end of that road, it's going to lead to a dead end. And you're going to say, like, I wasted all my time getting to this dead end when you would have walked back. If you stay and you don't expire in life, by the time you get back, then you're going to do better than just walking to the end of that road. But the justification people use is, I've been walking on this road so far anyways. It's the same reason they stay in dead-end jobs. So I'm just going to stay on it.
That, you know what? I agree. That, I mean, I've been walking on this. You hit the point of no return? That point where you're in a boat or you're in an airplane and you look back and you can't see land and you look forward and you can't see nothing. I might as well keep going forward because I surely can't see why I started.
Yeah.
Now I think that you just said it best a second ago. It's not productive. I don't know if it's productive. It might not be productive, but that is the reality of how people feel. You know.
Yeah.
I think that couples. I think it's a good thing to start from shared experiences. I don't think you should let those shared experiences fool you into believing that you love someone that you don't, and that you now don't have in common. I told you my motto is the biggest problem with people in relationships is just because you love somebody don't mean y'all should be together. And maybe y'all was good for each other at 20, but maybe y'all not good for each other at 30. That people change, grow, and evolve. So I'm not saying that just because your partner, you're 30, you're 10 or 15 or 20 years older now, and you both have changed. I'm not saying leave the relationship. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that I can see how only focusing on the positive aspects and things, the positive aspects of this relationship, you don't want to trick and fool yourself into believing or staying with someone that you don't have anything in common with at all. Because those things eventually might not be enough. You have to have something in common and share something to have and form a connection.
Right. I agree with that. I think we're on the same page there. I think that one of the things that happen when you have this empty syndrome and you're faced with your partner again, that can be worked out is simply that you don't know your partner. And just because you don't know your partner does not mean that you're misaligned. Well, and your partner may have changed. You could have changed. All that has to happen is you got to get to know your partner again. You know, I mean, sometimes, what do they say, you need to try food 5 times. Sometimes you may think, like, I really don't like this particular type of food. Then you keep trying and it gets better. And this could be the same way about some of the things that are going on with your partner after you relearn them. So it might be a knee-jerk reaction of like, okay, now I'm learning my partner. Actually, I learned they do this one thing that I really don't think I like. And tell you, and I'm not saying, I know you're big on like, don't accept something that's, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, if we have the knee-jerk reaction instantly that like, oh, nope, I don't like that. I'm going to just, you know, drop it like it's hot now. Like, that would be, to me, silly, even if this person has changed.
I agree. I really like that idea. And that's, I definitely think we're in the same space. And we share the same perspective of getting to know your partners over again. And you know what? I think you're making me come around a little bit. Like, you're not going to like everything, every single thing about somebody. And just because there is something that they do that irks you or annoys you, you're different people with different perspective and different ideas. You're going to be different. You're not going to be a clone of each other. So there are going to be some things you don't like. My thing is, I don't believe in couples staying together if someone has something that goes against the core of who you are and your identity. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's what I mean, but people gonna get on your nerves. You know? Like, they're gonna do, we're all gonna have things that we don't like, and I think that that's okay.
Well, speaking of identity, I know that's your area. How do you see this affecting the parents' identity with this shift?
You mean with kids moving out?
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously they don't stop being a parent, but I imagine it is a shift with your role as a parent from parent, you know, child living with you to child going into the world.
From an identity perspective, what I read some, I didn't want to bring it up, but I'm going to bring it up. I hate bringing it up if I can't quote the source. So I was reading some stuff about relationships and couples breaking up, and they were talking about men and women taking breakups differently. And that's because a larger part of what happens is women sometimes sacrifice for relationships in a different way than men do. Like, women will, like, dudes might not play golf as much, but they keep playing golf. You know what I'm saying? So, like, women sacrifice all of who they are for the we. Sacrifice just in a different way for the we. So when the relationship is over, it's kind of like, who am I? Because we was we to me. And I sacrificed all of who I was to help this relationship go. And when we cry and we're upset and we're hurt, but we never stopped doing some of the things that we did before I met you and while this relationship was together. So to couples in the relationships, I wonder if it's a traditional sort of family, men don't socialize the kids. Women breastfeed. Women socialize the kids. A lot of times they're the ones that's taking them to church if they're going to church. Like, think about it. She's not Sherry, as an example. She's Joe and John's mom. She wasn't Sherry a long time ago. She was Bill's wife. So a lot of times what happens to women, their identity has been stripped away from them from the time they got married and they took somebody else's name. They became so-and-so's wife. They got married. They was Joe and Jill's mom. So society, I think, puts women's identity, it attaches women's identity to their kids and to their families. So now when the kids leave, my identity is gone. Who am I? Because I've been Joe and Bill's mom. I haven't been Sherry for a long time. So that's why I wonder, is the process different for women as it is for men? Like, I'm still Keelan. You know what I mean? You may still be you, but that's Keelan's wife or Keelan's girlfriend or so-and-so. You know what I'm saying? Like, our wife and kids belong to us. I'm not saying they do from a societal standpoint. So that's something to think about. I wonder if that plays a part in all the identity dynamics and who has it better or worse, or why just the process of identity is different.
Well, that's a good point. You know, like, there's some attachment to being a mother, what that looks like. And you're right, it's ingrained by society. And I mean, even the pressure that women experience. I know there's a whole biological clock thing, but also the experience that's like herd mentality. So what's up? When are you going to have this kid? When is that going to happen? And then trying to juggle it all with the career and those type of things. But if you spent all of these years really with a lot of emphasis on that mother role, and now that's gone, it's possible that you might go into some form of depression just based on like a loss. Like, it's a loss. I was obviously still a mother, but I was a mother who did these things and the kid was in my house, and now, you know, I imagine that some parents want to go actually with their kid to college. You know, they probably didn't think about that when the kid was little. They're probably like, I can't wait till this little joker gets out of here. 18, we'll get him out of here. But then as he gets closer to 18, they're like, I don't really know if I want them to leave. Because the identity has changed. That's a long time to change and mold a new identity. And then when they leave, it's sort of like a loss of who you are. You got to recalibrate. Who am I now?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. Like I said, it will be great to hear something from, again, b2bpsych@gmail.com. It would be nice to hear something from ladies to see if what we've read and research we've read and just us sort of theorizing here, if we're on the right path. Is the process of identity and finding yourself a little bit different once the kids are gone? Is it different for women than it is for men? You know, and I think that's a really interesting point and good point you talked about, just sort of society and the pressure to have kids. In my adult development class, when we talk about work and workplace and identity, I used to ask this question. I used to ask the ladies, if you could have your dream job and make your dream salary but not have kids, would you feel complete? And something like 3 out of 4 women would say, I don't know if the word is complete, but I would feel like something was missing. And I think that comes from society pushing and poking and prodding and telling women that a part of what makes you a woman is being a mother. And I've heard, you know, women who had kids talk to, you know, a woman that can't have that, a woman that don't have kids can't tell me nothing.
Oh.
Like you don't have kids. What you know about raising kids? You don't have, like, you know what I'm saying? So, again, I'm not saying that to say that that's a woman thing. I think that's a society thing. I think society pushes and pokes and prods and tells women, this should be important to you. And if it's not important to you, there's something wrong with you. Look at how we look at women in their 30s that don't have kids. Obviously, there's something wrong with them. Women who aren't married and who don't have kids by a certain age, as a society, we start to ask questions. We start to question their sexuality. We start to say, she must can't have kids or something. It must be something biologically wrong, right? Because every woman should want to have children, right? So we start to throw, as a society, we start to ask all these questions.
Yeah.
I think that, man, we coming up. I hope that couples out there listening, I hope that those that are in this space, that they have their house. I hope that they enjoy the process and make it a game. You know, get to know your partner all over again. My grandfather, God rest his soul, said, never, you know, never stop dating. I never stopped dating your grandmama. Never stop dating. You know what I'm saying? My grandmother was around her house when she was putting on lipstick. He was like, Grandma, why are you putting on lipstick? She was like, I don't want to be sitting around the house looking ugly for my husband. He might want to take me to the picture show. The picture show. Show you how old she, shout out my grandmama. The picture show. So this idea of you never stop dating. Never stop trying. Never stop trying to be appealing and appeasing to your partner and have fun. You know, look at it as have fun and get to know. And the thing is I like the idea of building from all of the positive experiences that you've had. And obviously, if you've been with somebody a while, y'all probably have had some bad times, you know. It's not to say that, but start from a good place. We got kids, they're healthy, they're happy. We got them out of the house. They're kind of decent people. They, you know, hopefully they're starting careers or they can kind of sort of support themselves. And that's a good thing. And we both shared in making that happen. I think that that's a really good place for parents to start. But I think it's interesting that for people to think about, it's interesting for people to ask themselves some of the issues that I might have with all of this. Are they because of the way I prioritized the family dynamics? Mm-hmm. Am I having issues now with this transition? Are some of the issues that we're having because of this transition because me and my husband or my wife or my partner, whatever your family dynamic may be, we didn't pay attention to each other. We just put all of our energy to the kids and we forgot about each other.
Right.
And this sort of, for a lack of a better term, lost feeling that we feel, does it come from along the way we didn't maintenance this relationship the way that we should have?
Well, yeah. And I think that there's going to be a lost feeling regardless. So this is like, if someone's like, oh, I feel like I'm good with my partner and I feel lost, does that mean there's something wrong with my relationship? No. I mean, it is a loss. It's genuinely a loss. You are losing the relationship the way it looked, and it's going to now morph into something different. So in order for it to morph, it has to change from what it was prior, which means you're losing something, ending something, and starting something new.
Yeah. And I just had someone contact me and say you can lose your identity, and it is important to keep a piece of yourself for yourself as you move forward. You never surrender all of who you are to the relationship, but you keep a part and piece of yourself for yourself. So that's the shout out. That's a good point.
Well, we appreciate all the listeners tonight.
Yeah. Again, if you have any questions, comments, suggestions, we up on the album. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, b2bpsych@gmail.com. B the number two B psych psych b2bpsych@gmail.com. As we always say, again, we always like to thank WMUL 88.1 FM and Marshall University for giving us this platform to talk about relationship issues, mental health issues, community issues, and everything else in between. It is a privilege. We want people to know that we do not take this platform as a joke. It is a privilege and an honor to be able to share our ideas and our thoughts and our perspectives, because we know that those ideas and perspectives can influence people and can give people different perspectives to make choices, you know, and to maybe make choices that they would not have made before. On behalf of myself as well as Dr. Chapman, we appreciate the opportunity. So, again, as we always say, I love you all. We love you all. And maybe we will continue, you know, a part two of this before we move on. Just couples and couples in transition, and maybe a little bit more next week, maybe a little bit more on, you know, couples maintaining their relationships. So when tragedy happened or when things happen, or maybe even when couples are just moving into a transition phase, or maybe just getting older. Maybe that transition is just getting older. Maybe those transitions can be not as bad or helped if you're maintaining your relationship along the way. So maybe that's something we can kind of speak to and get into, and Dr. Chapman can give us some pearls. He can throw some jewels our way next week a little bit before we move on to another topic. Like I said, I always love to hear him talk about just a couple stuff, because that is his, that's his thing, that's his specialty. So he is and give out, what's your Coach Chapman, what's your site?
It's Chapman Training and Consulting.com.
Yeah, so that's another place you can get into them in regards to that. So as I always say, graveyards are full of regret and potential. Make sure that you die empty, that you give the grave nothing but an empty shell. Make sure that the people that you love know that you love them, and make sure that you are doing whatever you're doing in this life. Make sure you do something that excites you, to set your soul on fire. And as I always say, I love you all. Peace and blessings. God willing, we'll talk to you next week, and Dr. Chapman will always take us out.
Yeah, so maybe next week, we didn't hit on single parents. Maybe we'll also tackle single parents next week. Yeah, I also wanted to echo what Dr. Hinton said and say that we appreciate you all listening, particularly when you chime in with something like that, because that lets us know there are listeners out there, and that's rejuvenating. You know, we both do a lot of different things. So as we come to this and have these conversations, you know, we're giving you the last bit of energy we have left for the day. So it's kind of rejuvenating to know that at least for me, it's not like when I'm teaching some classes and I just see like names and I don't know if it's people behind there. So we appreciate that. I want to say to the parents that have graduating children, or even kids that are in college, job well done. You know, it takes a village to get these things done, and you've made many sacrifices. And just as much as this is a celebration for your child or your adult child, this is a celebration for you also. And while job is well done, and you know that the job of being a parent never really ends, also remember, if you happen to be partnered, that the relationship, hopefully, that's something that you want to last and thrive too. So that's something that you want to pay attention to. And this might be the opportunity, regardless of how things have been in the past, if it's going great, if you feel like you had some missed opportunities earlier on, this is your opportunity to rebuild your house or do a whole new construction. Most people love the idea of moving into a new house. So start building your new relationship house with your significant other, and you can reshape and rebuild it the way you want it to look. This could be the second half, the second season. And there's no reason that if you think about it, my dad likes to give this analogy. He told me this analogy once about a cruise. He said, life is kind of like a cruise. He said, say it's like a 7-day cruise. You know, when you first enter the cruise, you're like excited about all the possibilities, all the things you can do. And then you just end up eating and going to sleep. But then in the middle of the cruise, as the days go on, you start to realize, you know what, I really don't have that many days left on this cruise. You start to be more cautious and intentional about what you're going to do. And that's also what you can do in your relationship. And you can make it a joyous situation. Just because you're on the second half doesn't mean it doesn't have to be a blast. So blessings to you. Looking forward to your rebuilt house. And job well done. We'll talk to you all next week.
Well, you can tell everybody. The recording has stopped.
You can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am, yes, I am.